Welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining me. Our guest this evening, Whitley Strieber. Whitley is a best-selling author of 7 works of nonfiction, over 20 novels. His bestsellers include Wolf in War Day, Communion, Transformation, Majestic, The Greys, and many, many more. His brand new book, Alien Hunter, Underworld, that's out and available. We're discussing the idea behind alien underground and underwater bases. We're also opening up phone lines in this hour, so you can give us a call if you have questions or stories you'd like to relate to Whitley. This is the time to do that. Whitley, have you continued to have experiences, and when is the last time that you believe you've been in contact?
Well, it's not like it used to be. It definitely is not. The last really amazing thing I had took place in December of 2007, I believe. And that was an unbelievable thing. I wrote about it on my website and in my blog. It's called, I think, A Most Unusual Experience. And in it, it was an experience of some kind of interdimensional thing. It was just almost indescribable. Subsequent to that, things happened that could be connected, but as I say, what happened to me between 1985 and about 1994 was just an absolute peak experience for anybody in anybody's life. It's not happening every day now, no, not like it was. Also gives me a chance to think about it and do research rather than living it from day to day, which is just as well.
Do you think there will ever be a day when you don't have to wonder if they're coming back for you, or do you think that you're going to be under their microscope until the day it's time for you to move on?
Well, I don't know that dying would necessarily end this, because one of the things that happens routinely in the experience that the most of UFO investigators don't like to talk about because it doesn't fit their theories is that the dead show up with these guys. And let me give you an example. I was an FAA inspector got in touch with me some years ago because he was desperate for answers to a question. And this is the story he told. He said that he had been in his living room with his wife at about 10 o'clock at night. Their little 7-year-old boy was asleep upstairs. Their old dog became restless, even though it had already been out. And the wife, he was a creature of habit, he never normally would get restless. And the wife decided she'd take him out again. And as she opened the front door, she saw a ball of light flash over the house and disappear beyond the pines. They lived in a pine forest. On the horizon, she called to her husband, "I just saw a plane going in on fire. You're going to get a call in a few minutes." The next thing they knew, their 7-year-old comes running downstairs, yelling, "Daddy, Mommy, little blue men came into my room and they brought Tommy," that's his older brother, "with them. And he said to tell you he was all right. And he called me in desperation to find out if anyone else had ever had such an experience, because his eldest son had died the week before in an auto accident." And I was able to tell him, yeah, it's pretty common, pretty common. And that tells me we don't know what this is. We don't know what they are. And I don't think we know what we are either, frankly.
Whitley Strieber is our guest. I have a question in an email form we'll cover when we come back regarding the black-eyed kids phenomenon. I know that Whitley has related his story in the past with an encounter. I'll read this letter. We'll have Whitley weigh in, and we're taking your phone calls. That comes up next right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader. If you've missed any part of tonight's show, just remember, it's very easy. You can find it again by going to coasttocoastam.com. Sign up to become a Coast to Coast Insider. That will give you access to 5 years of past archived shows. You'll also get access to transcriptions from past live chats with George Norrie and other guests. You'll also get an opportunity to be a part of the live chats with so many fascinating guests that you hear right here on Coast to Coast AM. There's news, there's archives, there's updates. You can find it all. And again, for just about 15 cents a day, coasttocoastam.com. That's a site to visit. Become an insider today and never miss out on another moment of the best in overnight talk radio. We're back with Whitley Strieber. And Whitley, on our show, Darkness Radio, we've talked for the last 3 or 4 years about black-eyed kids and the strange phenomena of these creatures. I know when you visited us a few years ago on our show, you related a story as well. I had an interesting email that came in from one of our listeners, knowing that we'd be talking to you tonight on Coast to Coast. He says, I was listening to your show, as I always do. I felt compelled to write in and give you a theory on the black-eyed kids phenomena. I'm not with any investigative team or media that deals with this, so it's just my theory I concluded through research and people's experiences. Going down the alien abduction route, I think BEKs are an evolved organic species that have been observing us for quite some time. Since the first case of alien abduction, publicly reported back in 1957, the Antonio Villa-Boas case. So let's take it from there. 60 years on, they've learned a thing or two about us. First, when it comes to children, we're very protective and vulnerable, especially when they need help. They are the best commodity we have and may sound cheesy, but they are our future. How many parents would kill to protect their kids? So, to disguise themselves as children, they think we will follow without question because a child is in trouble and needs our help. Through reports of BEKs, they never give eye contact right away, so we have no need to panic. And the late times banging on the door asking for help would suggest a real emergency. Theoretically, how many people have let them in and that we never hear of that again? Perhaps a state of amnesia takes place. Do they even take us off planet? Is Area 51 so classified not because they have alien tech, but because aliens are allowed by officials to learn about abducting us and what they do and allow it in secrecy? What do you think about the phenomena itself, and do you believe that it is alien in nature that we're dealing with?
Well, the only thing I've seen is what I related earlier was that strange child on the bicycle who did have very dark eyes and very pale skin and black hair. He was a black-eyed child. He wasn't in a group. He was just one on a bicycle. I don't, you know, when people say observing us, what does that really mean? I mean, would we really spend 60 years observing somebody? I don't think so. If this involves aliens or contact with some aspect of some other kind of creature that maybe we don't fully even understand, it's not about observation. It's about something functional. There's some use here that they put us to. They want something. They get something, or they wouldn't be here anymore. I mean, they're certainly, I can't believe they're observing the evolution from Frank Sinatra to Lady Gaga. No, it's not about observation. And people say, well, maybe they're taking our DNA. And, you know, I had an experience, Ann and I did, when we had our old cabin. We had noticed that there seemed to be someone kind of hanging around. It was really a little scary. And I had been walking out in the woods. This is long after I'd stopped walking out in the woods at night, and the strange little alien creatures had not been around there for a long time. It was like a person was out there. And in many ways, a lot scarier than the alien, let me put it that way. And so I was out there one day looking for evidence, trying to find this, and I saw this kid sitting under a tree quite a distance, about about maybe a half mile back from the house, smoking a cigarette and wearing a sort of jumpsuit, like an overall, coverall. And I thought, he looked like I was about 11 or 12, and I thought, oh, no, it's really dry. I don't want kids out here smoking cigarettes with matches and stuff. And so I walked over there to tell him that, you know, he needed to quit to put this out because it was too dry. And I leaned down toward him, and it was very obvious that this was not any ordinary child. He looked like a person who had matured to about the age of 11 or 12 and then just gotten older but not gotten any more mature. So he looked like a sort of a very weathered child. It was a very, it's not something you see, and I hope I'm describing it in such a way it makes sense. It was very disturbing. And so, and he made a noise too, a sort of low growl. It sounded not human. It sounded like an animal. I went back to the house and told Ann about it. She said, well, maybe we ought to call the cops. And I said, I'm not sure what to do. It seemed like a kid. And so we didn't do anything about it that day. The next day, we used to have our pool. We had a swimming pool in, and it was very private. And we decided, as we often did in the afternoons, late summer, it was a warm afternoon in September, late August, to go skinny dipping. So we were out there swimming. And there, behind the pool, there was a wall of brush and trees that you couldn't see through. And under it, there were, it was open, sort of an open shaded area shaded by the trees. And inside this, where we couldn't see him, there was somebody running back and forth, gasping and breaking sticks and going on like it was just the worst thing in the world for us to be out there naked. And obviously, I mean, it was very embarrassing and upsetting. And we went inside. I threw my clothes on and went rushing out to see who the hell this was. And I saw that kid dash off up the hill behind the woods and disappear. I told Ann about this, and we just didn't know what to make of it. I went out looking for him a number of times. I got lost one time, and which seemed impossible, but became so disoriented I couldn't find the house. So I quit going out looking for him. And eventually we left the house and moved to Texas. This is October now. And couple weeks pass. We're in a little condo now in Texas. And suddenly, I realize he's standing in a cul-de-sac at night right beside our bedroom. Cul-de-sac between the screened-in porch and the side of the house. And so I could not believe it. All the way from New York. How did he even know where we were? But then people in the buildings started seeing him. One man saw him leap off of a balcony into the swimming pool with no run. I mean, he just popped off of it like a cork popping out of a bottle. It was impossible. It couldn't be done. Another couple saw him climbing up a wall of the building, and then he went onto a upstairs balcony and started pulling the spokes out of somebody's bicycle wheel. And they called Texas State Social Services because it was like a feral child. It turned out he was living in an apartment immediately behind ours with these two men who were just off the scale weird. And I called the owner of the apartment and found out he was no one living there. They were squatters. So the guy called the sheriff, and the next thing we knew, the two men are going from door to door in the building trying to sell the furniture of the owner of the condo who's kicked them out, and they're going to be leaving. The next thing I know, I'm out in my little garden, tending my garden, and the kid goes stalking past in a fury and goes stalking off down the street. We never see any of them again. Now, was that a black-eyed child, or what was that? What was that? This happened. He was real. He probably still is real somewhere. I don't know if it relates to the listener's question or not. It probably doesn't.
A lifetime of fascinating experiences. Whitley Strieber, our guest. Here's a quick email, and we'll get to some calls after the break. Hi, Dave. I'm a resident of San Antonio. I wanted to see if you could ask Whitley about the Medina Base Annex. On November 11th, 1963, a week before JFK was killed in Dallas, was a huge explosion in San Antonio. JFK came to San Antonio before Dallas and was supposed to come back after to dedicate the JFK high school and was supposed to tour the Medina or Medina base. My mother, who was alive then, told me there was a lot of UFO sightings weeks before the explosions. Rumors at that time were that they were working on a new type of atomic weapon based on UFO technology.
Well, I didn't hear anything about the UFO technology part of it or the UFO sightings before that happened. But I certainly vividly remember the event. I was at school at the University of Texas when it happened, and my mother telephoned me and said, Whitley, there's been an atomic explosion north of town. You could see the smoke. You could see a mushroom cloud, and everybody's talking about it. Then they came into the neighborhood the next day with Geiger counters, checking all around the neighborhood, men in white uniforms with Geiger counters. And we understood that it was a test of an atomic cannon. And the shell, one of the shells had exploded. And I do know that there was a spike in cancer in that part of San Antonio in the late 60s and into the 70s. But I don't know how well documented it is, but I do know that an awful lot of people got cancer in that time. And it's simply because I knew so many people, and that was where I lived, my home. So yeah, I sure remember the incident, but none of the UFO-related stuff that the listener discusses.
Another quick email here before we go to break from Dennis. He says, I'd love to ask him, why has no one taken video of the objects coming to and leaving this underwater landing platform you mentioned earlier? And if it's an underwater landing platform, why would the vehicles need to land, period? Thanks. It comes from Dennis in Tucson, Arizona.
Well, it's a good question. I think there might be some video of the Topanga Canyon events. The thing that happened with my friends who were out walking, they had no video camera with them, and they didn't expect to see anything like that. The problem with video is, who expects to see a thing like that? Who's ready? No one ever is. That's why so much of the video you see on the internet, maybe some of it may be authentic, probably is, but most of the authentic stuff is just very fuzzy because people aren't expecting it. It's not normal to expect to see a UFO, and so people just aren't out there doing it. And as far as the what's going on off of Malibu, I've never heard of anything going into the water near that thing or out of it, right close to it, the right off point. Doom farther south, Topanga, it's only a few miles. It's 3 or 4, 10 miles maybe at most far south. And Santa Monica's a little farther south, another 10 or 15 miles. But as far as video is concerned, there's probably video out there of balls of light and stuff and orbs off of the coast here. I would guess there is. I have not seen any, but there's bound to be some because they happen often, and somebody's bound to have made some video.
Whitley Strieber, our guest, talking about Malibu. I know that there's an organization, a group that does alien and UFO contact video and photographs that have actually captured some very stunning, very strange video footage off in the Malibu area. I believe you can find that information simply by Googling it. We'll come back. We'll begin taking your phone calls right here on the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. Whitley Strieber, our guest this evening, Alien Hunter, Underworld, a brand new book, not a sequel to Alien Hunter. It is a standalone book with the same characters about an alien presence underground and its possible significance. It's a work of fiction, but Whitley has incorporated a lot of what he believes into this book. It is out and available. We're taking your calls now on Coast to Coast AM. Let's go to Wildcard Line 2, Anonymous. Welcome to Coast. What did you want to share with us this evening?
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. How you doing?
Doing well.
The first time sighting for me, about 12:20 Eastern time. I'm facing a tree line about 100 yards away, and I see aircraft, airliners arriving at our local airport about 30 miles to the north, and I observed two orange objects. No sound, no nothing. They were cylindrical, kind of like oval shaped. And that sighting lasted for about 3 minutes. And then about maybe a minute or two after that, I saw two more. And they, I ran to my car, got my binoculars, and they proceeded to the north where they disappeared. They weren't helicopters. No sound. They weren't commercial jetliners because they have the blinking lights and the green lights and the blue lights on the tail, or on the wings, rather. I'm just wondering what the hell I saw.
Now, you said that this was in space where there was other commercial airliners in the sky. Did they seem to be taking notice of this or making any diversions to try to avoid each other?
No, there weren't any aircraft around at the time. And usually we get the Miami flights and the Dallas flights flying right over. But tonight, for some reason, or this morning, we didn't get any. There were hardly any commercial flights. But these objects were flying in formation south to north. Orange in color, no sound, and I looked at them through my binoculars, and the farther they went to the north, they disappeared. There weren't any clouds at the time, and I'm just wondering what I saw.
Whitley, you talked earlier about the orange orbs of light. What do you make of the claim that Anonymous has this evening?
Well, what I can say is it's a really common thing to see, especially in the past couple of years. These orbs, and specifically orange-colored ones, are getting surprisingly common. There was a period of time when a lot of people were seeing sky lanterns, you know, these little lanterns that they put a candle in and they float off into the sky.
That's what it looked like. It looked like one of those Chinese lanterns, but they were flying at a consistent speed.
And did the light flicker at all?
Yes, it did. In all four of them, there was a flicker inside.
Well, maybe they were lanterns.
Right, and I know what Anonymous, sometimes it'll look as though they're in a formation, but if they've actually floated up together and they get caught in a wind pattern, they will appear to hold position as they're going along. But if you are seeing a flickering from within, there's probably a good chance that those were lanterns. Thank you very much for calling in. Let's take another quick break. When we come back, we're going to go east of the Rockies. Annie in Green Bay, you're up next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. Our guest, Whitley Strieber. We're wrapping up the evening. We've got calls coming in east of the Rockies. Annie in Green Bay, welcome to the show. What's your question this evening?
Yeah, Dave, thank you very much for taking me. And Whitley, I've been dying to talk to you. I love your book, Communion and the Movie. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. I want to tell you about my experiences when I was 11 or 12. So that would be back in 1959. And my mother finally let me know what she was doing outside all the time, looking at UFOs. And I looked up in the sky, and there was this big star. And little stars came out from underneath it. And they were doing like acrobats all over, about 15, 20 of them. Then they went back up inside the star like a mothership. And then it just flew off, you know, the big mothership. But it was like the North Star, only it wasn't in the north. Then I've had witnesses all the time that I've seen them. My sister was with me one time, and my two-year-old son, and there was five of them that followed us from my mother's house about 20 miles away to my house. And my sister, you know, told me to pull the car over, and she knew they was following us, and I looked, and they were, but they were small. They were small, brownish-looking craft, about four or five of them. And I pulled the car over, and she jumped out and was going, take me, take me. And my son was crying, and, oh, it was something else. But, you know, I believe what you said. I believe you said this in your book, that they follow in families. Do you feel that? And another thing, too, Whitley, ever since all my experience, the last time I've seen him was about 1987. But I've had visions that are all come true, visions and ESP.
Well, thank you for calling in, Annie. Do you believe that, Whitley? Does it seem to follow family lines?
It does follow family lines, in fact. That is one of the most consistent findings we have from the many, many correspondents, and including in my own life. It wasn't in my personal family, but in my extended family, there certainly was a lot of this, including an uncle who was involved in the Roswell instance, which is why I've always known, at least since he opened up to me about it, that it was real, that it happened. In fact, once in a bookstore, I met four generations of a family who had all had the experience, including a 101-year-old great-grandmother.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it was awesome. And that was a black family. And this is something that happens a lot more than you would think in the black community. But like the Native Americans, black people have got enough problems without having to go claim that they had UFO sightings, so they keep it pretty much to themselves. But I have a feeling that if this was more open, we would find that these communities are very well represented among the people who get this, have this experience.
First time caller line, you're on with us. Jeff in San Jose, what did you want to talk about?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you for taking my call. I'm a first time caller, long time listener. Whitley, it's an honor. Wow. I've read many of your books. The Key is absolutely one of my favorites. I have a long commute and I've probably listened to it in its entirety at least a dozen times. It's one of those books that I find myself constantly going back to because it just resonates with me. My question to you, Whitley, is I had an experience. I've had experiences my whole life, but one of them that's always been, that sticks with me that I've never been able to find answers to was something that went on in my childhood for a very, very long time. I would wake up in the middle of the night, and I would see something like kind of the depiction of the Greys, except the difference with these beings is that their skin was chalk white. There was quite a struggle. I would try to fight them, but I would always end up losing. I would black out and not remember where I was. Sometimes I would wake up in a very dark place. It looked like a cave or something. I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face. And one of them would come and grab me and escort me. I always kind of felt like they were trying to communicate, but it would just terrify me as a child. And this went on for many, many years until finally I'd honestly had enough of being afraid. And I remember when the very last event actually that happened, when one came towards me, I let it know that I didn't like this and I wanted it to stop. And it did. It did for a long time. And then the last time I saw them, they came back years later. But I remember I was terrified. I was laying in my bed, and I could always feel when they were going to come. There was just a change in the air, and I thought, oh, my goodness, this is going to happen all over again. But instead of them picking me like they would, I felt one, it sounds very bizarre, but took its finger and jammed it into my back and started to trace like a triangular kind of symbol. Didn't grab me. And that's when I knew that, okay, things are different. I turned around and I see my room is just full of these chalk white beings with a big head, dark eyes, full dark eyes. And there was just a huge exchange of information. And that was it. From that day on, I've always felt like if I understand things that I maybe shouldn't. There's just a knowing, an understanding. But anyhow, I just wanted maybe your insight on that experience.
Okay. Well, first, there was something that you said, listener, that was very telling. That is, that you reported a change in the air. You just said it in passing. But many people, including me, who have this experience, notice a change right before it happens. Most specifically, and you'll find this is in the first Alien Hunter book, one of the technique, and the second one too, as a matter of fact, one of the techniques that they use to determine where the visitors are is the silence in the woods. And that would be what we would notice at our cabin, is there would be a silence. And the night of December the 26th, 1985, we took a walk that evening, and it just started snowing. And the silence was absolutely holy. It was so beautiful. The snow was dropping down, and each, you know how a snowflake under a microscope looks like a wonderful crystalline form? These crystalline forms were big. You could see them with your naked eye, and that's what all the snow was separate crystalline forms floating down out of the sky. It was the most extremely beautiful moment, one of the most beautiful moments I've ever known. I didn't understand at the time what it meant, but it meant that they were on their way. So you say a thing like that, and it tells me you've probably got something authentic going on here. Now, I think that you said very quickly also there was a big exchange of information. I would work with that. I would spend some time, quiet time, meditating, and just ask yourself very gently to remember the information that you want most to remember, you need most, that would be most useful to you. And don't try it. If it doesn't come up, don't worry about it. Then later you'll sleep. It's liable to pop into your head as a dream or even the next day. But you can build and find out what that information was if you do it very gently and very carefully. And don't push it, or your imagination will take off, and you won't get it. But if you do it correctly, it'll come in unexpected flashes now and again. You probably have a lot of interesting stuff there to think about, or this would never have happened. But that's what it was about.
Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate you calling in. Let's go to Wild Card Line 4, Amanda in Van Nuys. What would you like to talk with Whitley about?
Hi, Dave. Hi, Whitley. Okay. I think, Whitley, you're just fantastic and an incredible writer. And you talk about black-eyed kids, and I saw a black-eyed adult. I was in kindergarten, and the parents were coming to pick up the kids, and I passed by this father, and I looked at him, and for some reason, I really looked at him, and he looked down at me, and he grinned, and his eyes turned black, and I recoiled, and I was like, it was this feeling like, oh, I wasn't supposed to look at him, and, you know, I went on my way, but I was like, oh. And I was wondering what you thought about that. And then I have one more question, if I can.
Whitley, have you heard of adults with these black eyes? And do you believe that that is alien in nature as well?
I have no idea what it is. I have to tell you, that's an experience I've never had, and I've never heard of anyone having, with the person's eyes suddenly turning black like that. That would be concerning. I have to tell you, if I saw someone like that, I would definitely want to move off right away.
Yeah.
I don't know whether this has anything to do with aliens or not, but it's certainly...
Definitely something to avoid. We've got a minute for you real quickly with your other question, Amanda. What else did you want to ask?
Okay. Willie, I actually met you at a book signing in New York City with Art. And Ramona was there, and I had given Art a T-shirt with a picture of his first cousin on it, who was also my late meditation teacher. And Art took it, and I said he was a great man, meaning my meditation teacher, and you gave me this look that haunted me. It was like this like, I don't know, funny, weird look, and I don't know if you could possibly remember, but I've been haunted by it. I didn't know why you looked at me that way, and so I wanted to ask you if you possibly remember.
Yeah, sure. I know why. I don't remember the specific incident, but I'm sure that your statement about having a meditation teacher struck me and made me want to say something about how important meditation is. On Unknown Country, on my website, I have a meditation area where if you click on Whitley Space on the masthead and look to the right, you'll see meditation group. And we have a new meditation in there every month. And meditation is very important to making this experience focus. If you have this experience, or even if you don't, but if you have it, nightly meditation, quiet, in-looking, mindful meditation is critical to enabling you to gain from this experience whatever is most valuable to you. And so that was probably why I gave you that look.
Thank you, Amanda. We're coming into the last minute or so of the show here, Whitley. What projects do you have coming up that you'd like to mention for us as well?
Oh, well, I've got Alien Hunter Underworld is out, of course, and we're working on an Alien Hunter TV series. We're well along with the Grays movie. David Slade, the Twilight director and director of 30 Days of Night, is signed on to direct it, and we're casting it. I've got a lot of other projects in the works. The Alien Hunter 3 is halfway finished, and it's going to be about the White House. It should be interesting. It's just got a lot to do with all of this stuff that we don't hear very much about. And I'm working on another nonfiction book with a co-author who is a professor of religion, and we're writing a book together. And I'm writing experiences, and he's writing interpretations. Aside from that, I'm not very busy. Plus, I'm on my website all the time and on Facebook and so forth. I'm around.
Whitley, thank you so much for spending the evening. I appreciate the time that you gave us this evening.
Always great to be on Coast. Thank you.
Alien Hunter Underworld, that's the name of the new book. You can find more information about Whitley at unknowncountry.com. His new book series, alienhunterbook.com. You'll find all that information there. I want to thank Music Master Tom Danheiser tonight for picking our music. Dan Galante, Tim Dennis, engineer back here in Minnesota. Lisa Lyon, George Norrie, our guest Whitley Strieber, and all the great contributors this evening. Craig Hewlett, Robert Zimmerman, Scott Stevens, David Paulides. I thank you all for being a part of Coast to Coast AM with me. I'll be back with you all at the end of the month. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 29th through the 31st of August. And remember, check me out at darknessradio.com. This is Coast to Coast AM.